Welcome to the TF Blockchain Podcast, where we interview blockchain, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency innovators actively building, growing, and investing in this emerging technology. I'm your host and founder of TF Blockchain, Jonathan G. Blanco. TF Blockchain hosts quarterly conferences and monthly events live recorded for this podcast. Our current chapters are located in Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, San Francisco, Austin, San Antonio, and Dallas. To get involved with TF Blockchain, participate in future TF conferences, attend a chapter in your area, or to start a new chapter, please visit tfblock.io. Hey, I want to share a special promo with you from our friends over at CoinMine, so you can get your very own CoinMine 1 and mine cryptocurrency from your house in the simplest way possible. I have one, I love it, and I want to make sure you can get one too. So visit coinmine.com/tfblock and use discount code TFBLOCK to get $50 off. This podcast is presented by TF Labs, a blockchain product and startup studio. TF Labs collaborates with companies from growth stage to enterprise in order to establish their blockchain product strategy. As a startup studio, TF Labs builds and validates internal products to one day be spun out as companies. To partner or get involved with TF Labs, please visit us at tflabs.io. Well, hey everybody, my name is Jonathan G. Blanco. I'm the founder of TF Blockchain and TF Labs. I'm really excited because we're here today with Brian Finney, who is the founder and president of Democracy Live. We're going to have a really good conversation about voter technology and what's going on in that space. We'll ask some questions about blockchain and those sort of things as well, and just overall tech. So with that, Brian, thanks for coming.
Thank you for the invitation,
Round of
Jonathan.
Applause. Woo! Normally we do an audience, as you mm-hmm. know, but we're recording it like this, and I'm excited.
Yeah. All right. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Well, Brian, I'd love if you could do us all a favor and just introduce yourself real quick to our audience, let them know a little bit about yourself. Not even just the voter part, but just, you know, how did you get involved in technology to begin with, or, voting or the passion there? I'd love to hear about that.
You know, I'm a long-term citizen of Seattle, King County, born and raised all the way through, and when I was younger, I was able to have the opportunity to go back to Washington, D.C. and work back on the Hill and in D.C. for a couple of senators here in Washington State. And then when I came back, it was about the late 90s, and the internet blew up, right?
Okay.
It was kind of a zoning requirement back then that if you lived in Seattle, you have to start an internet company.
There you go.
And so, then what happened in 2000 was the Gore-Bush election happened.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that or not. But
definitely do.
Fairly close election.
Hanging chads.
That's right. Yeah, hanging chads, dimple chads, all kind of chads. And so, but based on my experience back in D.C. and being an old poli-sci kind of nerd, we saw what happened with the Gore-Bush election and some of my experience in technology. It's like, let's make a chad-free America. You know,
okay.
Can't we get voting right in this country?
No chads allowed.
Right. So, but about 20 years now since we've been doing voting elections technology.
Nice. And so at that time, was that a little bit of the impetus? Were you doing it before then or just after? Or what drove that?
It was really what was happening. And we saw that the consequences of an election and that elections do matter.
Yeah.
And in that case, it was 435 votes. Separate the difference between a President Gore and a President Bush.
Yeah, let's dive in on that for a little bit, right? Because I definitely remember that. That was a very trying time. It even went to court and so
forth.
And, what happened in that scenario, for those that might not be aware of it, and how could something like that been avoided with voter technology?
Right. Well, you have close to 200 million voters in this country, and the fact that it got down to 434 votes, 435 votes actually, and it turned out that back then they had these punch guard kind of machines, and the punch cards would be read, and you'd have a punch in the card was like, was that really a vote? Did they punch through it all the way through? And it turned out that the infrastructure, right, the engine of our democracy, were these little 1968-based, technology.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah,
this really does matter and has consequences. So to get at the systemic level and try to figure out how we can all vote in America with success and accuracy and accessibility, It turns out that really, really does matter. And so that's how, you know, I kind of got into it thinking, you know, let's get to the foundation of how we do democracy in this country.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I mean, talk about seeing a pain point and trying to solve that overall. So great. Well, so that was, what, 20 years ago, essentially.
Right.
Take us, you know, kind of through that journey. So how has Democracy Live evolved, and how have you evolved in that process from, you know, trying to solve this hanging chat issue, I guess, to where you're at today?
Right. Well, you know, it's been about 20 years now, and we talked to hundreds of, if not thousands, of elections kind of administrators. You know, there's 8,000 jurisdictions in this country that conduct elections. And you know, it's surprising that, you know, when we first, this is 20 years ago. So to replace the hanging chads, we all went to touchscreen machines.
Yeah.
And so the federal government,
I'm sure, had their own issues, right?
Well, that's what we found out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, so Congress authorized $4.1 billion under the Help America Vote Act to replace these hanging chads and punch cards. And we all went to these touchscreen machines for about 3 years. And then what happened? Then the kind of the activist community and some of the concerned citizens said, you know, wait a minute, we have these touchscreens, but what's really behind the touchscreen?
Right.
You know, what's behind that technology? And so that really became an impetus to go back to paper. Right, so paper ballots and paper trails became really, really important. And so it's kind of interesting. You advance through technology, and then you kind of regress a little bit to go back to paper because of the political pressure for paper over the last 20 years.
Right, because, you know, this interpretation or feeling that you have a source of record, right? Because if it's just a touch, someone could say, oh, I voted for this person, and when in fact maybe they didn't, or vice versa, right?
Right, right, yep.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, with what Democracy Live is doing right now, what part of the voter technology are you focused on? The whole, you know, are you a soup to nuts, or are you just like,
right.
Is it like other software where you're just pieces of it? How does that
You know
work?
What we do is we deliver an accessible, secure ballot to voters all over the world. So.
Okay.
You know, if you think about here in Washington State as an example, we vote 100% vote by mail. And so the elections official will mail you out a ballot, which is great if you can read or see or hold a ballot. But if you're one of the 25 million voters with disabilities, they've got Parkinson's, they're blind, you know, voters in this country, then you can't really hold, see, or mark the ballot. So we work with the University of Washington Center for Technology and Disabilities to create an accessible ballot. While we did that, it was during the war, it was during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and we realized that there are voters around the world that can't get the ballot.
Right.
So working with AWS, with Amazon, we created this secure ballot portal to allow voters that are blind or disabled or in the military to be able to access their ballot.
Yeah, and let's walk through that a little bit. Like, so how does that work, you know, without giving me the secret sauce? But how is that kind of working overall? Is it, you know, are we basically talking about just like front end UI to, you know, some of the stuff, or are you actually even re-architecting how voting is thought of from that record management side of things?
Right. Well, that's a good way of putting it, kind of a record management, because what it is at the end of the day, you know, it's ballot data.
Yeah.
Who's on your ballot, what's on your ballot, the contests, mapping that to the right voter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to make sure that you've got the right ballot going to the right voter, the school board, the judges. You know, all these different kind of down ballot candidates create hundreds of thousands of different types of ballots.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that you're able to get the right ballot to the right voter. That's the very first step. And we do that by basically working with the elections officials, importing their data into the secure, federally approved cloud environment. Again, we work with AWS on this.
Uh-huh.
And what ends up happening is that the voter is able to log in, they can access their ballot, they can mark their ballot, they can print out the ballot, or in some cases, electronically using the cloud, return the ballot. But at the end of the process, either if it's a voter in Kandahar or a voter in King County, the voter can print out the ballot, or King County Elections can print out the ballot.
Got it.
There's always paper involved.
Yeah. And so I'm assuming there's like some level of key management there, right? Like overall, or like from a from a privacy standpoint, and like, is that kind of how that works? Is like each person essentially has their own private type of key that obviously you're managing in that sort of way?
So the private key in reality is our signature.
Got it.
So we don't do anything different than what we do with every ballot that's cast in King County and Washington State and tens of millions of ballots around the country that vote absentee. So here again in Washington State, we all vote 100% vote by mail. And every one of those ballots gets approved by staff down at King County or elections administrators who have been trained by the state patrol to be able to verify that that signature matches with the signature that they have on file.
Interesting.
So nothing gets tabulated, nothing gets counted until that signature gets approved.
Is that a manual approval, or are you starting to use AI now or things like that?
It's manual.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just down in King County elections on Friday, and there's a whole staff down there that have been trained by the Washington State Patrol to be able to verify the signatures.
Yeah.
And you've got 1.2 million voters here in King County. Everybody that votes in King County is signing that signature affidavit. That's how they approve.
What do you think that'll evolve to AI? I mean, that feels like a perfect use case for some sort of AI memorization and so forth.
Right.
But I'm assuming it's also prone to error, right? And that's probably why you want that human element to it.
You know, in this election, especially in the election season that we have going on right now, there's so much visibility and perception leads to confidence, right? And so knowing that we have trained personnel that are manually reviewing those signatures, I think gives more confidence to the electorate that you have trained people that are actually looking at every one of those signatures and matching them before they get processed and tabulated.
Yeah, and I'm assuming there's, even within themselves, there's probably a system of checks and balances too, right?
They do, absolutely.
Yeah, so, I think about how elections are run in countries outside of the United States, right? So, hey, we're in the U.S. right now, and you think of some of authoritative governments, right? And so I have family in Venezuela, and the Venezuelan government actually runs the voting booths and those sort of things, right?
Right.
And it's interesting because there's all these things hey, we got to count the votes or this or that, and there's paper, but maybe 5% of the votes get counted or so forth, and so you can manipulate. Otherwise, right?
Yeah. Part of the security of our system is that we do have those 8,000 localities that administrate elections. It's not a top-down approach. It's not the federal government that runs elections.
Yeah.
It's Hazel and Mabel in upstate Vermont, Wanda and Walla Walla and Mabel in Mobile. they're the ones that are actually conducting the elections, and they're responsible for their community, and many times they are elected themselves to be able to administrate the elections. And so at the end of the process, we have, almost 200,000 locations in this country where people go and vote. And, at the end of the day, the voting systems themselves that actually tabulate the elections, they're not connected to the internet in any way.
Yeah.
Even our system, we have a mobile voting solution, but it's still paper-based, and it's not tabulating the election.
Yeah.
It's the paper that ends up getting tabulated.
Got it. And is that a good or a bad thing that it's not connected to the internet? I'm assuming there's a sense of security with it not being tied to the internet?
There is, yeah. And again, I go back to, perception equals confidence. And if people have, the perception that, okay, this is not connected to the internet, then you have, I think, heightened sense of faith in the electoral process. That being said, people say it must be an only paper-based system.
Mm-hmm.
What they have to keep in mind is that not only do we have 25 to 30 million voters in this country that can't see the paper, so we have to address that. We can't leave them behind. We also have a federal law that requires that every one of these 8,000 elections administrators must, by law, electronically deliver a ballot. Mm. So we have some real requirements and some needs to not just say, hey, paper is the panacea here. We have to come up with alternative solutions. And that's part of the solution that we try to come up with here at Democracy Live!
So Brian, you were just mentioning about how these election officials need to send the ballots up, right? They need to upload those essentially. Can you talk a little bit more about that overall?
Sure. It stemmed from the 2010 federal law. It was a Help America, there was actually the MOVE Act, which required that every one of these elections administrators must, by law, deliver a ballot electronically to voters around the world, no matter where they are. It stemmed from, at the time, the Iraq and Afghanistan wars were in a kind of full battle mode, and these GIs were not able to get their ballot in time to be able to vote.
Wow.
And that was kind of the genesis of that law, which is why, these administrators have to deliver a ballot electronically.
That totally makes sense. So you know, kind of moving forward and bringing this, you know, hey, we're in the Seattle area, so I'm curious about things like, obviously, like the King County elections, and we're definitely in election time right now.
Right.
Super Tuesday is just a couple days away. You know, what are you seeing overall with just how the technology has evolved, right? And then, like, what's that meant for either voter turnout or how people are responsive to those sort of things overall?
Sure, yeah. Well, again, here in King County, we are all voting 100% at home, vote by mail. That is the fastest growing method of voting in this country, is people voting at home with a ballot that's mailed to them. But again, it goes back to if you can see the ballot, if you can read the ballot, if you can mark the ballot, that's great. But we have to have alternatives to just the paper. So not only is it for the blind and disabled community, but it's also for those military voters who are out there on the front lines, you know, fighting in theory for our right to vote. And yet you snail mail them out a ballot and snail mail it back. They may not be fully enfranchised.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening today is that in order to comply with the law, many of these elections, these 8,000 elections administrators around the country, to comply with the law, they're emailing an attachment of a ballot. In some cases, they're faxing ballots back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's all part of the federal requirement. So what we did out here in King County through the King Conservation District, we piloted a new type of technology working with AWS, which allowed for a voter to be able to access their ballot on their smart device, on their computers.
Super interesting.
Yeah. They could access the ballot, they could mark it, and they could return it back to the elections office. And so that was brand new.
So would they print it, or would they send it via email, or?
It's their option.
Got
right?
it.
So they were able to print out the ballot if they wanted to. But for the first time, hearing it in King County, voters were able to return it back also using that secure portal, the same federally approved portal that we, again, partner with AWS on this. It's been approved by the FBI and Homeland Security and all the federal agencies for the AWS cloud.
Yeah.
So instead of a fax machine, instead of an email attachment, right, we think the federally approved cloud is a more secure method of returning the ballots back.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. It's trusting the computer and overall, right?
Yeah, it's hard to find a fax machine on a submarine. Right. And so even though that's allowed by law, it's probably not the most secure method.
Yeah. And so, you know, is Democracy Live, are you across all of the 8,000, or how does that kind of work? Because it would seem as though it would be easier for election officials to basically have a universal standard overall.
Right.
Is everybody doing something slightly different?
You know, the way that they're doing it today to comply is the majority of them, unless they're using a system like our system, they are emailing attachments, they are faxing back and forth. And so part of our job is to go out there and hopefully educate those elections administrators that there's a more secure method of conducting the process of complying with the law to transmit ballots back and forth, and also to help those voters who cannot see the ballot because they're blind or disabled.
Yeah. I'd like to move the conversation towards blockchain here for a little bit. You know, I know that you're currently not using blockchain, but I do know that you've definitely studied it and thought through it and so
Absolutely.
Forth. Blockchain gets used as a, or sorry, voting gets used as a use case for blockchain all the time, right? It was like, hey, like it'd be great for, you know, fraudulent or potentially fraudulent elections or in authoritative dictatorships and things like that. I'd love to hear your experience or your thoughts firsthand on it, right? You know, especially because you've been doing this for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have a lot of, you know, thoughts and opinions of where perhaps blockchain is now with the technology and, you know, where it could be, you know, at a future time.
Well, blockchain is fabulous technology. It is extraordinary math and wonderful science, and it has so many purposes. For what we do in the public eye like we are, it's got to be very easily, the technology that we use has to be digestible by the public. We have to be able to explain it, you know, to Hazel and to Mabel, who can then explain it to her voters.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the amazing science behind blockchain, at least at the public at large, if you can't really explain it in the first couple of sentences, it's hard to really get that early adoption and to get the buy-in. We have to have the public trust. And I think we're going to eventually get there. But this is, you know, this is a step towards the ultimate goal is securely delivering a ballot to voters, no matter where they are, no matter what kind of disability. And so for us, we looked at the landscape of different options that were out there. We certainly considered blockchain. Mm-hmm. It makes it's amazing technology that has so many different purposes. But for us, what we wanted to do was keep the same type of process that's in place today.
Yeah.
So when you access your ballot, you're accessing a ballot from a secure website, really is what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's a secure portal. You still have to sign your name. As we talked about before, that's how everybody does it today when you vote absentee or vote by mail. It's the signature. So for us, we wanted to keep the same process without having to, especially in a presidential election,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of educate and train the public on a kind of a newer type of technology.
Right, right. And, you know, one of the arguments that people might say when it comes to blockchain is like, oh, well, it's you know, it's an immutable ledger, or the information is there forever type of thing, right? And I guess how might you answer that with like what Democracy Live is doing, or how technology is today? Because obviously, I'm assuming there's some sort of auditability to, you know, what people are doing
right,
with
right.
voter technology today,
yeah.
right? That'd be crazy if there wasn't. So love to kind of hear your thoughts in that regard.
Yeah, so what we end up doing is that we are marking a ballot. The ballot it's not quite as sexy as blockchain. You know, it's really just more of a document storage
yeah.
issue. We're storing a document in the AWS cloud environment. That ballot then gets reviewed by the voter, but you're storing it in AWS. They call it Object Lock, which has, you know, again, they've got all the federal certifications. That's why some of the nation's most critical documents are stored in cloud environments that are federally approved, like mm-hmm. AWS or Azure. Microsoft has got a very good cloud environment as well. And so it's a real kind of more of a document storage issue.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you're storing the ballot. The voter can verify and review that their ballot is accurately stored in Object Lock or AWS. And then the signature gets approved. If the signature gets approved, then the ballot gets downloaded onto that ballot paper.
Yeah.
And it's the ballot paper that's really the audit. So you can go back and do a
Got
paper
it.
Hand recount if you wanted to.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, the next question I kind of have for you is just overall, when you think about how just voting is handled in different areas. You know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but why do you think that, going back to like where we're at today when it comes with the Democratic nomination, right? And so, you know, there's, I think it's 1,900 delegates basically that are being fought over and
yeah,
so
1991,
forth.
1991, yeah.
So I'd love to kind of understand, not getting into necessarily our U.S. politics, but how does that number, or when it comes to the process, I guess, essentially like the game that needs to get played across
right.
multiple countries. And like, you know, when you're thinking about it from a technology standpoint, is it more just like you set the rules into the voter tech, and then based off of those rules is how the outcome is? Is that
yeah,
sort of?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, the demographics at large are such that you know, when you provide a different type of technology, it's going to cater to a different type of demographic,
mm-hmm.
potentially. And that's something that all the civic tech providers have to keep in mind. So as an example, when you have a piece of paper that you mail to a voter, right, who's more inclined to vote at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the older demographic. If you provide a ballot accessible on your mobile device, right?
Yeah.
Who's that going to cater to? And so it's really important, I think, as a provider of this type of technology, to offer both,
yeah,
right?
Right?
Here's the paper and here's the mobile option. Because, you know, if you're not speaking the language, you know, as an example, we provide a secure balloting portal for voters all over this country, all over this world. And one of our jurisdictions has 9 different languages, right?
Hmm.
You've got Khmer and you've got Mandarin and you've got, you know, Spanish and all the different languages, right? But the language of the future, the next generation voter, their language is mobile.
Yeah.
Right? So they're going to be demanding that they speak, that we speak, that we provide them a ballot in their language, which is the mobile language.
Right.
So
right.
I think that the technology has to always reflect, you know, the voter community at large.
Yeah. 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 It's really interesting when you think about that, too, because when you think about your mobile devices, it's basically like your third hand, right? You know, it's like another piece of you. And so from a security standpoint overall, does that become problematic, you think, in the long run? Or like if I Is it something as where I'm more like logging into a cloud type of environment, or is it something where I'm holding my voter information, you know, on my mobile device? Or what's kind of the thoughts on that?
So what's important is that at least the tool that we provide, you know, we've been doing it for nearly a decade now, so over 1,000 elections. It's never been compromised. Because it's been in a very, you know, it's been a federally approved cloud environment. It's not an app. You don't download it from the Play Store.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
You log into the same kind of cloud environment that's, again, been approved by all these different federal agencies. Some of the nation's most critical documents are stored in these, you know, this cloud environment. So I think that the reason why, you know, there's a heightened awareness, and I think approval for cloud kind of technologies is that they've come a long way over the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
And the most, you know, all the different levels of certification that you have to go through to become a federally approved cloud environment, you compare that to, you know, the traditional methods of doing voting.
Yeah.
I vote here in Washington State, I'll take my ballot, I'll stick it in a mailbox. Relatively secure, right? But somebody can come by and take that ballot out. Right. I'd rather put that ballot in a cloud environment that's been approved by, you know, all the different federal agencies.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've been talking about voting through the political process, essentially. Do you do anything with just, I don't know, the person that has a social group or voting in that capacity at all? Or is it all more from a democracy type of standpoint?
You know, it's interesting. We provide the actual ballot itself to voters all around the world, make it fully accessible. But also, and I happened to had an opportunity last year to speak in front of the Senate Rules Committee back in D.C. And the big question was, what about Russian interference, right? Mm-hmm. How is that going to, you know, impact our election? And we hear so much about the voting machines and counting the ballots. But this isn't about a tabulation. This was not about tabulation in 2016, that the nefarious state actors, you know, Russia was trying to interfere in our election. It wasn't about the tabulation systems. It was about the information systems.
Right, right.
And so it was the Facebooks and it was the Twitter, it was the misinformation that was really impacting our electoral process. And so what we're trying to do also at Democracy Live, to answer your question, is that we want to provide accurate, accessible information about who's appearing on your ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, as mentioned, I work back in D.C., a political science guy, I run a voting company. Yet when I get that long ballot in King County and I look at that judge or I look at that that school board candidate or city, it's like, who are these guys?
Right.
And so the idea is to provide a more interactive balloting information experience.
Yeah.
So I don't have to rely upon Twitter and Facebook. Right. I can rely upon the real information to listen directly to the candidates who's appearing on my ballot, find out who's funding them.
Right.
Right. Is it the NRA or the Sierra Club?
Yeah.
And bring that into the balloting experience.
Yeah. That's so important because I totally agree. There's so many times where I do that and I know maybe who the people I'm interested in voting for are and then everybody else I don't. So then, you know, what do you do there? Do you just vote for the name that is easiest to that you like or whatever?
Right.
You
know? He's Irish. So vote for him.
Yeah,
not Irish.
Exactly.
So. It's got to be a better way of doing it than that.
I totally agree. How would something like that work? Just, you know, it seems like you would have it in on the mobile device and kind of more provide that overall education, maybe perhaps before the election or before you're actually completing the ballot.
Yeah, so we have this other product. It's called Live Ballot. And Live Ballot allows the voter to go online, access. Basically, it's an interactive sample ballot, really. And what you can do is you can click on that candidate. You can watch, listen, read directly from that candidate. So the candidates themselves can upload their content, explain to that voter why they're running, what they stand for, what they intend to do. You know, it's not a 30-second soundbite, you know, paid for by some outside group. It's the candidate speaking right to the voter saying, this is why I'm running, this is what I intend to do.
Yeah.
And then also because of the campaign finance information is all public information, you can also click on that candidate and find out who's funding them.
That's excellent, yeah. Yeah, because you just don't know. Yeah,
right.
And it's there's a lot of, you're right, there's a lot of misinformation there. And, you know, moving then to when there's initiatives and those sort of things as well, is that something that you're working on?
Yeah.
Information around that? Because sometimes it's the way those are written, you don't know if you should vote yes or no. Like, hey, I know what my opinion is about this. I just don't understand the way this is written.
Sometimes they do that on purpose, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so everything that's on your ballot, we put into Live Ballot, so you can be, and you can listen to both sides, you know, on the initiatives about why, you know, those particular supporters or opponents are are supporting that particular initiative or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We just talked about misinformation a little bit out there. What are some good ways that just the general public can make sure that they are, paying attention to the most accurate information and ignoring disinformation out
right.
there?
Look at the source.
Yeah.
Right. Always look at the source. Look at who's funding those sources. There's a lot of real public, publicly available information. Right. So you can go to Live Ballot. You can go to your county elections officials. Right. They typically will have information about those candidates, at least out here in the West.
You know,
in Oregon, California, Washington, we have things like voter guides and voter pamphlets. It's funny, the further east you go east of Walla Walla, Washington, you don't have that same level of information that you would have otherwise.
Yeah.
So we're pretty fortunate out here in Washington State to have that kind of information.
So like we were talking about a little while ago, we're right in the thick of the election season for the Democratic nominee. A few weeks ago, there was a huge mess in Iowa,
right?
Like, and it just wasn't clear who voted who won and what happened there.
Yeah.
Can you touch a little bit about on that?
Yeah, it actually shed a lot of light kind of on this whole voting technology space.
Right.
That has been historically kind of under the radar. And I think that's a good thing, because I think what it does is it reminds all of us that are in the kind of the voting technology arena to pursue best practices, right? You typically want to go off Broadway before you go on Broadway.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure that the folks behind the Iowa app went too far off Broadway. You normally don't want to start in such a high profile election, which is why we did this King Conservation District, which was a smaller little election here in King County, which is more off Broadway.
Yeah.
But always good lessons learned there as well.
Yeah. How did that go, by the way?
So it was the largest mobile voting election in U.S. history. Which isn't saying a whole lot. We had about 6,000 voters.
Oh, wow.
But that was double the turnout from the previous election.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what it shows is that when voters have an opportunity to have a more convenient method of voting, like they did in this pilot, they were able to access their ballot on their phone. They were able to mark their ballot. They had the option of printing it out, or they could have King County print out the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And when the voters were able to vote on their phone, it doubled the turnout from the previous election.
Wow. I could totally see why that would do that too, right? If it's easier.
Yeah.
So Brian, my last question to you is one in which I'd love for you to pose a question to our listeners and just what are things that our listeners and people in the community should be thinking about when it comes to voter technology or just voting in general?
Right.
What are some things that you can leave with them, and what would a question you would want them to think about be?
Well, I go back to the idea that there are 8,000 elections administrators out there, and in many cases they're your aunt, they're your grandmother, they could be your mom or your uncle, and they're out there working really, really hard. They don't work just two times a year. Elections is a very complex process. It's become an IT security environment now to be able to make sure that the right voter gets the right ballot, sometimes delivered electronically, sometimes delivered on paper, sometimes delivered on a machine. So there's a lot of different moving parts, and that at the end of the process, they're all doing it and we're all contributing to this because we believe in this little thing we call democracy.
Yeah.
So, to get engaged, get involved, be informed, be an informed voter, but participate in the process. Keep in mind that those that are involved in this process of helping to be the engine of democracy and fully ensure that all voters are fully enfranchised, that it only is a function of everybody's involvement. So when there are questions or concerns, bring them up, reach out. When we did this mobile voting election, a lot of people were concerned about it, yet they weren't engaging.
Mm-hmm.
Engage with us.
Yeah.
We want to collaborate. Let's make sure that we're working in collaboration as a country to make sure that we have the most secure, accessible voting technology and democracy we can possibly have.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
So one of the other really interesting lessons learned coming out of the King Conservation District, we not only just doubled the vote, but was really interesting was that when voters were given the option to either print out their ballot or return it and submit it electronically through their mobile device, over 90%, in fact, 94.2% of the voters chose to return their ballot electronically through their mobile device rather than printing out the paper.
Wow, that shows obviously some preference there.
Yeah. So that was an interesting part of it. The other final thing is that when voters, they sign their name, at least in the technology that we use, they sign their name just like we sign it on our kitchen table when you vote on a paper absentee ballot or vote by mail ballot. That return rate when you accept the signature, they remember those two people that are looking at the signature?
Right.
That's normally about a 1.5% rejection rate because some match, you know, some don't match. When we did it on the mobile device and you sign on your mobile phone, it was at a higher approval rate. It was down to 1.2% rejection rate. So I think it shows that when voters are given an opportunity to be able to have a more accessible mode of voting, which is, you know, lots of us are living on our mobile devices now, they can now access their ballot and it can be done securely.
Definitely. That's great. Well, Brian, I really appreciate your time. This has been a really great conversation. Thank you so much for being here. What's a good way that people can either get in contact with you or follow you or learn more about Democracy Live?
Just democracylive.com or at Democracy Live on our Twitter and Facebook. And you can all contact me anytime, info@democracylive.com.
Excellent. Awesome.
Thank you for listening to the TF Blockchain Podcast. Please help us continue to spread blockchain, Bitcoin, and crypto awareness by sharing this podcast, attending our events, following us on social, and rating and reviewing this podcast by clicking all the stars on our homepage so we can be more accessible across Apple, Spotify, and all podcast platforms. Thank you for your support. Keep learning, keep growing, and keep building. The views and opinions expressed at TF Blockchain events and podcasts are solely those of the ones presenting and do not necessarily reflect the positions or opinions of TF Blockchain. TF Blockchain is not responsible for the opinions or content of its guests and does not endorse any particular company or currency. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be used to make investment decisions.